The Netflix film Stowaway follows a three-person crew on a mission to Mars. They're played by Toni Collette, Daniel Day-Kim, and Anna Kendrick. When they discover a fourth person aboard, played by Shamir Anderson, his unexpected presence places them all in jeopardy.
The space travel in Stowaway is pretty down to earth. There are no sinister aliens, but there's plenty of calculus, both mathematical and moral, as the crew tries to puzzle their way out of their rapidly worsening situation. I'm Aisha Harris.
And I'm Glenn Weldon, and today we're talking about Stowaway on Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR, so don't go away.
I'm Yoe Shaw.
I'm Kia Miyakonatis.
We're the hosts of the NPR podcast, Invisibilia.
You can think of Invisibilia kind of like a sonic blacklight.
When you switch us on, you will hear surprising and intimate stories.
Stories that help you notice things in your world that maybe you didn't see before.
Listen to the Invisibilia podcast from NPR.
Welcome back. It's just the two of us today. Stowaway was directed by Joe Penna, who co-wrote it with Ryan Morrison. Toni Collette plays the mission commander, Daniel Day-Kim plays a biologist, and Anna Kendrick, a medical researcher. They discover the unconscious Shamir Anderson soon after leaving Earth's atmosphere and have to figure out what to do with him, given the fact that their food and oxygen now will not last them to their destination. It belongs to the genre of sci-fi that's firmly rooted in real physics, where astronauts faced with a potentially deadly technical problem have to figure out a way to survive, a way that usually involves a suspenseful spacewalk or two. So think The Martian, think Gravity, and that recent Netflix film, The Midnight Sky. Aisha, what'd you make of Stowaway?
I, for the most part, pretty much dug it. I'm not the most hardcore sci-fi person. Space movies I tend to be very hit or miss on. I don't remember much about The Martian, but I do remember seeing Gravity in theaters and being just like in awe of it for the entire film. But I also find 2001 A Space Odyssey kind of boring, and I realize that's sacrilege to say, but that's me. So this movie is very much a slow burn type of film. As you've already said, it's got a very realistic sense to it, and so it plays more like a drama, like a straightforward workplace drama in space. And I liked it for that reason. I also like all of these actors, Daniel Day-Kim, Toni Collette, who is playing a very different kind of character than we've seen in her last couple of movies, especially Hereditary and I'm Thinking of Ending Things. She is calibrated at a very more interior, not quite subdued, but definitely more in command because she is the commander of this ship.
Yeah.
And so I love seeing her in a different mode than what we've seen recently. I also really appreciate the types of films and TV shows, the stories, where you place yourself in the shoes of the people you're watching. Mm-hmm. And so I found myself throughout this wondering, okay, what would I do in this situation when it's very clear that like things aren't going to get better and you have to make a, you know, a calculated decision about like, survival. It made me think a lot about that really classic Twilight Zone episode, The Shelter,
yep.
Where there are a bunch of, you know, suburbanites who think the end of the world is coming and they have to figure out there's one bunker and there's like all this calculation. I love those types of stories. So this was like that, a little less extreme just because, you know, it's not the fate of the world. It's more so just the small crew, but also more extreme because it's in space. So
yeah.
I enjoyed it. I had a few quibbles with the way the story is doled out and some sort of muddled plot details, but overall, I liked it.
Yeah, yeah. I like what you're saying about the human interaction because I like this a lot. It's a film of modest ambition and modest scope and, you know, modest budget too, but it does manage to carve out a space for itself. It's intimate, but it doesn't feel claustrophobic. Intimate because it's such a small cast, but that ship doesn't feel claustrophobic. It feels kind of nice, actually. It's kind of roomy.
It's bigger than most apartments, I feel.
Yes, that's what exactly what I kept thinking about. It is a morality play at the end of the day. That's what it's poking at. And look, there's a reason I said at the top that there's no aliens, there's no virus, there's no science fiction horror elements here, because I think this film is better experienced if you know the parameters from the jump, because I went into this not knowing anything, and so I kept waiting for another shoe to drop, for some twist, some reveal, some horror. But no, this is Apollo 11, this is Gravity, this is using STEM to save your life, or at least try to. I particularly liked what Shamir Anderson as the stowaway Michael is bringing to this very tiny table, because unless you've been watching Winona Earp, you're probably a lot less familiar with him than with these other actors. The screenplay really stacks the deck with him, gives him this backstory that is engineered to engender sympathy in us. But it's Anderson who really delivers a very soulful performance. It really sells it. And that's important here because this is a science fiction plot. As you mentioned, Aisha, this is a science fiction plot that's not, I don't want to say cliche, but let's be generous. It's a classic science fiction plot. And in fact, a 1954 short story by Tom Godwin called The Cold Equations has been widely adapted. That's very similar to this. In fact, there was another Twilight Zone episode based on that short story. And there have been plenty of stories before and since that riff on this very same situation. So what is going to distinguish this, if anything, is that human element, the interactions between the characters.
Yeah. And I also think it's just there is a direction this could have gone in where, you know, you wind up really hating any one of the characters. I feel like in so many space movies or even like any sort of like travel movie, whether you're on a ship or a boat or you're in the Wild West, there's always that like one loose cannon. Mm-hmm. And that's not here. It's right. Just really trying to figure out what is best for the group versus what is best for the individual. And Anna Kendrick is really interesting here because I think she starts off in a very similar mode to what we've seen her before. The sort of like, I wouldn't say uptight, but super particular and very driven. But as the movie goes on, her character shows another side that I think we're not necessarily used to seeing Anna Kendrick play. And I liked her in this mode. I think it was a stretch for her. It's different from something like Pitch Perfect and Up in the Air. And so I really appreciated all of these performances. And I think that's really what drives the film. That and, of course, there is a very heightened moment sequence that I think most space movies have to have.
Right.
And I think it works.
Yeah, yeah. And let's talk about the Anna Kendrick of it all, because I suspect, and call me out here if I'm wrong here, but I suspect that the ending of this film, which we can't talk about, will divide folks. And I think that is bound up in the fact that one's response to this film is a referendum on one's personal response to Anna Kendrick. She's a very polarizing actor for reasons I guess I understand. I'm not sure. I mean, the dig against her as an actor and as a personality is that she's a tryhard. She's an apple polisher. She's a theater kid. But I mean, she's an actor, right? That's kind of the job description. I never quite got that because you hear the same thing about Anne Hathaway and Jennifer Garner. You hear it less often about people like Hugh Jackman, but I think it applies.
I was going to say the Anne Hathaway effect.
Yeah.
I think that's totally what it is. And I think part of that is the Pitch Perfect, but like people loved her in Pitch Perfect. I think it probably has more to do with like something like the Cups song that, remember that? From like a decade ago where she—
Inescapable.
Yeah, inescapable, very kind of twee, cheeky, just kind of corny. I think that that's true. For me at least, my response to the way it ends and the way the whole story shakes out, I think was sort of a referendum on myself and what I would morally do in that situation. And I'm like, That also plays a part in sort of how you might respond to this film.
Yeah, yeah, I agree. There is a very interesting, very online backstory to this movie. The film credits a lot of scientific consultants, as you might imagine. There's this one YouTuber named Scott Manley. He's a guy who knows a lot about astrophysics. He plays video games on his channel and critiques their science. And the director, Joe Penna, also started out as a YouTuber. His channel, Mystery Guitar Man, is still out there. He's got millions of followers. Penna sent the treatment to Manley. He sent it to a lot of people, but he sent it to Manley, who advised on a lot of the science, you know, the means of propulsion, the design of the ship, all of it based on current theory. And here's the thing. They didn't take all of his advice because you still got to tell a story, right? And if you directly adhere to all this tech detail, you're going to, in some cases, get in the way of the drama. But it's not a coincidence that nothing anyone says or does in this film feels like hand-waving or like technobabble. I mean, nobody is proposing reversing the polarity of the tachyon field. You know, this is none of that stuff. It's all very nuts and bolts. It's all very unglamorous, but it's not unexciting. And I think it's fascinating to see someone who has made his bones on commenting about something in the abstract be brought into a collaborative creative process so they can see why and how compromises get made.
Yeah.
Right? That's an interesting dynamic that I think the internet could use more of.
I will say I appreciated the fact that, like, I haven't taken a science class in well over 15 years. But, like, I think the science in this was at least easy to follow. Like, I could understand where the tension was. I could understand why a moment would be like, oof, this is bad, or ooh, this is good. and I think it does a good job of, like, using sort of not too layman, but layman enough terms for the average viewer to understand what is happening.
Yeah, I agree. At the end of the day, it has to be understandable. And the fact that there's so much underpinning it that is based on real world science is kind of gives it an extra layer. Plus the fact that it is ultimately a really well acted, tiny, kind of locked room drama. We want to know what you think about Stowaway. Find us at facebook.com/PCHH and on Twitter at PCHH. That brings us to the end of our show. Thanks for joining me, Aisha, as always.
Thank you, Glenn.
And of course, thank you for listening to Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR. If you got a second and you are so inclined, please subscribe to our newsletter at npr.org/popculturenewsletter. And we will see you all tomorrow.